And thank you so much for coming on Happy Home Birth. I'm so excited to have you.
Oh, I'm excited to be here.
So, Anne, I have heard about your personal experience, your personal birth experiences, and how you started off in the hospital and then later on moved to home births. I would love for my listeners to get to hear your experience and how that has affected you as a midwife.
Okay, where to start? So, when I was back in college, right? When I decided I wanted to be a nurse, this was in a long time ago. When I did my maternity, you know, my obstetric rotation, I knew right away that I wanted to go into obstetrics, but I had never heard of a midwife at that point, you know. And then my first job out of nursing school, we had to do a year of medicine, surgery, med surg, they call it, so that in order to get into a maternity unit. So I did that, and then I worked for 4 years in a local obstetric unit as a maternity nurse. And it was actually there that I developed fear of birth. Birth on the unit where I worked, my hands were tied as a nurse, but I would say that it was anyone that walked in. You know, when they're healthy, just, you know, to have a baby, they were given sort of this routine cascade of interventions that usually led them down a track. And I would say as a nurse, I had to often rescue a lot of the problems caused by this, right? You know, women were put on their back and attached to a monitor and a continuous monitor, and they, so they couldn't move, and they weren't allowed to eat, and they were put on an IV, and who can labor that way, right? Mm-hmm. So then they needed Pitocin, or they needed, you know, medication to make things stronger, and then they needed pain medication because they couldn't cope with it, you know. So it was one thing after the next, and what happened was I was seeing more cesareans. I was attending, you know, as a nurse, more cesareans than I'd ever imagined that I would. I wasn't really seeing normal birth. Birth was a disaster waiting to happen. That was the atmosphere on my unit. It was a potential lawsuit, and it's get them in, get them out, you know. And there was no humanity. There was no beauty. It was just really protect yourself from litigation. And there really wasn't a concern so much for each emotional, you know, each woman and baby and their experience of birth. It was, you know, as long as everybody's breathing with a heartbeat and no obvious brain damage. But, you know, I wasn't seeing great outcomes. I think the worst catastrophes I ever saw was working as an obstetric nurse. A lot of babies ended up in the NICU, you know, in neonatal intensive care. And, you know, sometimes moms and babies didn't make it or had a serious damage, you know. So, and I have a sensitive heart, and, you know, I had fear, you know. And of course, when I was pregnant with my first baby, I didn't know any better at that time. I was given, you know, I had a baby on the unit where I worked. So, but I was going in there not trusting myself, not trusting birth, and certainly not trusting the hospital and the staff, because I knew what was going on. But like, I just didn't know I had any other options. I was really young, you know, and of course, I was given the royal treatment because I'm a nurse on the unit, and everyone made such a big deal, and I was with the top doctor, but I was given, even if it was the royal treatment, like I said before, it was the standard treatment. So that meant that all these interventions that seemed innocuous, I was given, right? So I was walking in, I really was set up to fail, you know, walking in there with fear, and then told not to eat or drink and have an IV, and then the continuous monitor, and then the doctor coming in every hour. You know, I was on this clock of having to dilate a certain, you know, a centimeter an hour. And the doctor kept coming in, sticking his hands up me without even saying anything, walked out, told my colleague out of my room, you know, the nurse who was taking care of me, she's still four. And at one point he said, just give her Pitt. So in she comes and she's putting the Pitocin in my IV. I see what she, I said, hello, I don't want that. She says, oh, but her response was very well-meaning. She said, oh, honey, you don't want a cesarean, do you? And so, no, you know, like I was feared into it. I didn't want a cesarean. That was actually my biggest fear because I was afraid of being put at, you know, into that, you know, major abdominal surgery. I'm a dancer and I'm very athletic. And I also didn't see great, some of the, you know, bad outcomes I saw were during the operating room. And, but, you know, here I was in that vulnerable situation. So I'm feared into it. And then, of course, then my coping went out the window and then I needed an epidural. And the doctor I heard outside said, just give her an epidural. And then all this started to happen, this downward slippery slope. Baby's heart rate went down, dropped to a very dangerous low rate. And I knew what that was, and I saw the panic in everybody's eyes, and they called a stat cesarean, and they whisked me into the operating room, and I knew they had 10 minutes to get my baby out, basically, you know, pretty much. And I waited in the OR, prepped and ready to be operated on, watching the clock. I was by myself, and at this point, nobody was monitoring my baby. And we were waiting for the assistant surgeon who never came. So we were, I was looking at the clock, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, a half an hour, 45 minutes. And then by the time an hour, you know, like I had gone in my being, in my mind and in my body from total fear that I'm going to have a damaged baby to the resignation that she was damaged or she's dead. I mean, there was no other possibility that entered my brain at that time because I knew how serious it was. Well, what happened was the medication miraculously took over my body and I started pushing in the cesarean room, in the operating room, and I called out for help. And the doctor comes in and he's panicked because he doesn't know, you know, he was ready for the cesarean. The assistant surgeon isn't here. It's been over an hour. So he sees the baby, you know, is close to coming, and he cuts a big episiotomy. He screams, get me a vacuum. And he vacuumed her out. Now, I did not want to see her because I didn't feel I was able to cope with seeing a dead my baby, right? Now I know what I had. I had birth trauma, right? But I know that I didn't know that then. You know, I was traumatized.
Right.
And they said, she's fine. Look at your baby. And I was in another zone. I had left my body. I was like, I couldn't look at her. But she was fine. She was like totally looking around and had no they didn't even need to resuscitate. And so, like, knowing now what I know, you know, first of all, you know, continuous electronic fetal monitoring a lot of times causes it's 3 to 5 times increase in cesarean and false diagnosis of fetal distress is one of them when, you know, detecting or, you know, making everyone think the baby's in distress when they're fine. But you know, so they're all like, you know, I was not fine. And they said, you have a healthy baby, and nobody cared about, you know, what that experience was like for me. So, but it was, so I, you know, I had birth trauma, PTSD following, is, you know, the post-traumatic stress disorder that symptoms, coined when, you know, people started to research, you know, what's happening to our soldiers who are exposed to severe, situations on the battlefield, and they're coming home with all these symptoms of nightmares and anxiety, and they can't sleep and all sorts of panic and all sorts of symptoms that totally disrupt their everyday life and being able to participate in with life and relationships and everything like that. So I didn't know that, but I had all the symptoms of PTSD.
And then take care of a child.
Yeah, I take care of a child. Yeah, I couldn't even talk about birth. I couldn't look at a pregnant woman. I was very hypervigilant, like I thought something was going to happen to her. But looking at her or talking about the birth reminded me of what happened, and I would get flashbacks, like really invasive thinking. Like it just come into my thoughts, that scene of being in the operating room, and it was just, yeah. So, but everyone's like, what's the matter with you? You have a healthy baby, like get over it. Nobody understood. Right. And I certainly didn't understand, but it took me a long time to be able, to be able to go back into work, to face that scene. And, I told my husband, never again, I'm not having any more babies. And of course I'm pregnant again, two years later. Mm. And, at least in those days I thought I'll switch doctors. It's the same experience, very similar kind of experience. And this is, I'm as a nurse now, also, like I said before, my hands were tied when I was trying to help other people with the similar situation. And I was talking my frustrations to a friend of mine, and she had said, why don't you just be a midwife? And literally I said, what's a midwife? This was back in the 80s. We didn't have internet then. And but she, when she was talking to me about what a midwife is, I'm like, wow, that's cool. And I went to the library and I researched everything I could. And I'm like, this is what I want to do. I applied to midwifery school, and that began my journey coming home. Right. So it was a whole different paradigm, as you know. Going to midwifery school, it was like, so all the catastrophes that I saw as a nurse in the hospital became more the exception than the norm. And I was seeing beautiful birth. I was seeing, family-centered, compassionate, individualized, sensitive care. I was seeing that the responsibility and the empowerment was given back to the woman. And that, this sort of whole different paradigm of trusting the process, and we're there just in case. We're there as a lifeguard to hold that space of non-intervention when this brilliant process is working, and let it work, let it go. And, when you meddle in birth when it's going well, it's harmful. And then learning about how statistics in other countries, why the United States ranks the bottom as compared to other developed countries around the world in terms of mother baby outcome related to, our maternal mortality rates are the highest of all developed countries in the world. And our neonatal, newborn mortality and morbidity, as well as maternal morbidity, severe complications related to birth. Why are our statistics so horrible where other countries in the world, developed countries, and even ones that are less affluent, have much better outcomes? So you've heard of Dr. Marsden Wagner, yes?
Yes.
Yeah. So he's that famous, I'll tell your listeners, the perinatologist who was the former director of the Maternal Child Health Division of the World Health Organization. I mean, he's, very high-risk obstetrician, very big supporter of midwifery. And people ask, why are you such a supporter of midwifery? And he's because I support the evidence. I support the statistics. If you look at the common denominator of countries around the world that are getting way far better outcomes, mom outcomes and baby outcomes, than we are, they have one thing in common, is that all the healthy women, the healthy population, is served by midwives, and that's their expertise. And working together with, in conjunction with, or collaborating with in the team, with obstetricians who are really there for the high risk situations, for when there is complications and disease, which is their that they go to their surgeons, you know, and that is their expertise, is to diagnose and treat serious life-threatening complications medically or surgically. And so when you have them both working together, each serving the populations that they're specifically have expertise with, then we're serving the entire population of best serving the entire population of mothers having babies, and we're getting better outcomes. But when you apply that high risk care to the normal healthy population, which constitutes the vast majority, that's what's happening in the United States, and that's why we're having such horrible outcomes. And you know, in the United States, birth trauma is like over a third of women describe their birth in this country as traumatic. So if you consider that 4 million people a year are having babies in the United States, a third, that's a huge number. Right.
Yeah. That's scary.
Yeah. So I guess the icing on the cake was that, you know, I believed in this and I was so excited about it. But when I was pregnant with my third in midwifery school, and we, you know, we had great clinical, like I did out of hospital clinical as well as in hospital clinical. When I said to my midwife, I really believe in this. Like I'm in it 100%, right? Like, but now I'm the one pregnant, so I had the past trauma from the other two births, and you know, for it, I need it to work for me. I need to see that it's going to be different, and I need to experience it myself in order for me to authentically stand behind it, right? And she said, oh, it's going to be so different. You're going to see. It's going to be so healing. I had a lot of fear, you know, and the old trauma came back, and it was in my body. And anyway, but it was a beautiful, completely different birth experience that I had with my last two babies. And that really convinced me, wow, like, you know, I'm in. I'm all in. Like, if I can do this, anyone can do this, you know.
That's incredible. And,
yeah. So in terms of how I got to home birth, I had a great job. My first position out of the hospital, out of midwifery school, was in a wonderfully supportive obstetrician midwife group. So we had six midwives and two obstetricians, and they really, it was a doctor midwife team. And it really embodied sort of what Dr. Marsden Wagner, his ideal in terms of, you know, getting the best outcomes, because the obstetricians that were there didn't want to deal with healthy. They just were there for when a cesarean was needed, or somebody had a seizure disorder, or, you know, on insulin, or had high, you know, preeclampsia, high blood pressure. So we did vaginal breaches, we did, you know, twins vaginally, and they really let us have free rein to not just midwife the healthy population, but even when there was a situation that was high risk, let's say a woman was on an insulin drip or you know, had high blood pressure and needed to be more medically managed, they could still have a midwifery, you know, benefit from the midwifery care of with woman and you know, how midwives attend women in labor, right? So they still had as humane and compassionate and as a empowered, you know, sensitive, you know, birth as possible given their situation. So I did that for a while, and I was glad I did, because I got experience. I got more confidence in dealing with emergencies, because emergencies do happen. And when, you know, in the home setting, it's not like I can say I need help in room three. Mm-hmm. You know, we really need to know how to handle when, you know, emergencies. And I felt like I was happy from my nursing background and from my hospital birth background, so that, you know, I could, you know, with confidence, start my home birth practice, which I, which I started because I felt, even though we were in a very supportive environment, it was a 2-hour commute for me. The local hospitals were not as supportive of midwifery care and of natural birth. And so it was worth it for me to commute 2 hours there. But then, you know, when I had my fourth baby, and it was like, all right, you know, so a colleague and I started the home birth practice because I felt like even though we were in the hospital, I felt like at home it could even be better. Like there were still some things that went on in the hospital that I feel my hands were still kind of tied as a midwife. You know, it's a hospital, and you know, people who are having babies aren't sick, and a lot of women make informed decisions that they want to give birth at home. So I felt like, why not create a practice where they could? You know, we really didn't have a lot of home birth midwives in our neighborhood. And in those days, this was back in 1997, we didn't have, I remember we would put up some like flyers in some health food stores, and there wasn't a, like prenatal yoga or places like that, you know, but they had, there was some childbirth educators that we spoke out as to, and, but like within a year we were booked solid. And she at that time was a doula, then she became a nurse, and then she became a midwife. And, you know, we've had a very thriving practice since, you know, pretty much a year after we started.
That's amazing. Yeah, yeah. You were obviously filling a need for that to have booked up so quickly.
Yeah. And thankfully now there's other home birth midwives, and, you know, and you'd think there'd be more. I mean, this is New York, but maybe in the city there was more, but unfortunately we need to have the home birth option available in all localities. In some localities it's really tough, you know, just from being on social media. I'm so passionate about improving birth and improving mom's experience of birth and baby and the family. So my daughter had said to me a couple of years, maybe about 4 years ago, a little over 4 years ago, she said, you should be on like Instagram. And I'm like, well, because I'm not so techie and I'm not interested in social media at all. And, you know, the less I'm on the computer, the better. And, you know, I wasn't raised that way. I just like interacting with people and, you know, one-on-one or even in a group setting. But I don't know, just the computer is just not my thing. And but she's like, oh, you get the most awesome pictures from your families, and you know, you're so passionate, and that's where all, you know, you like to inspire and educate, and that's where like the newer generation is. And she kind of gave me the 101 on it. So I started posting just kind of as an extra hobby, but it became crazy. Like the following, I mean, it's now up to like well over 90 something thousand on social media, like combining all the accounts. So I'm hearing from people all over the world, and it just, I was telling you before we went on the air that, a lot of podcast interviews, people contacting me from all over the world with questions and issues. And unfortunately, I'm hearing my birth story that happened to me, I'm hearing that from so many women. It's still going on today.
Oh yes. That's what I was thinking as you were telling it. You know, if I've heard your story once, I've heard it 1,000 times.
Yeah. Yeah. Still going on today, that people are reaching out and saying, I had this horrific experience the first time. How can I have a better experience the next time? Or do you travel? They'll say, you know, there's no home birth midwives in my area. There's not a birth center. I have to have a birth in the hospital for insurance or whatever reasons. How can I have like the best experience, you know, in that environment? You know, so it kind of birthed all these online services of, you know, like my course of how to have a home birth like experience, an empowered, sensual, primal, beautiful, family centered, however, you know, culturally, whatever, culturally sensitive, like the birth you want, the birth of your dreams, how to have that and have it be safe and, you know, safeguarded in a hospital situation or in a home or, you know, so I'm hearing from people all over the world about how to do that. So that's why, you know, one of the reasons I created the course and birthed sort of the online consulting so that I can help in the best way I can, you know, people in all areas that don't have this.
I agree. And I think that, you know, community for home birth mothers is just so vital, so important, because so many people don't realize that it's even an option still, you know, and that's one thing I wanted to ask you about. One thing that I've noticed when I've told people, you know, oh, I had a home birth and I work with a midwife, they think, that's so dangerous. You're putting your child at risk by not being in the hospital. How could you ever do that? What would you say to those people?
Well, so it's a good question. I don't try to convince people where to birth, right? Because even, you know, if a woman is coming to me and she says to me, you know, she wants to have a home birth. She's done all her research and there's solid research about the outcomes of home birth midwifery care are as safe or even safer, right? There's really good, solid research that supports the safety of it. But she needs to feel safe deep in her body. And it, you know, even subconsciously, she needs to feel safe. So if a woman comes to me and says she wants a home birth, she's done her research and that, you know, and her partner's not on board or her family's not on board, that's I deal with that differently, right? Because I want to respect how the mom feels. And a lot of times the dads just are nervous, right? Or the partners are just, they just need, you know, that were, or I've had like my three main issues that dads will, or partners will, you know, be concerned about is how to pay for it, safety, and what the mess. And so a lot of it's like misconception. So pay for it, you know, in New York, the New York law that is that a home birth has to be covered by insurance, right?
So that's fantastic.
Yeah. So that's fantastic. So, but I live it on the border of New Jersey and Connecticut. They don't have those laws. So if their insurance is from another state or more federal, it's not, you know, may or may not cover it, you know, but it actually finances is not their main concern. It's usually they just want to know that it's safe because just like what you said, I'm talking about the partners who are concerned about safety. They have this myth like that being in the hospital is safe, right? So what is a midwife? You know, so sometimes they just need to be heard. They need their questions answered. You know, what do you do if my partner, you know, if she hemorrhages, what are your common emergencies? How do you deal with it? They just need to know, right? And they just need to be heard and they need to be answered. Their questions need to be answered. And they see, you know, my diplomas are on the wall. I have a very homey looking home office, but yeah, I spend 2.5 hours in the first visit and 1 hour each subsequent visit. And they see that, you know, I am doing the same care but actually more holistic and more thorough than they were used to with their 5-minute visits somewhere else, right? With an obstetrician. So sometimes they just need to see that I'm not just hippie waving sage. And actually they meet, I put them in touch with other families in my practice. I don't have hippies coming to me. I'm telling you. I mean, I love hippies. I'm just saying like that. That's a misconception. Most of the people that are coming to me are very educated. It's and from all walks of life. So yes, I of course have homeschooling moms and farming. You know, people who are into farming. and living in more rural areas, but it's usually a very educated professional crowd. Doctors, I have anesthesiologists, psychiatrists, nurses, midwives. I have lawyers and a chiropractor, acupuncturist. Like I have a very therapist, a wide range of professions that come to me, and they're making an informed decision, right? So sometimes it's just a matter of, you know, hearing them out and giving them, showing them a book, you know, telling them, I always tell them, you know, read business, watch the movie Business of Being Born, because I think Ricky Lake did a great job in really exposing what's going on with our country's, you know, newborn and maternal more statistics, what we were talking about, and, you know, how is it that, and, you know, and she's comparing how, you know, the safety of home birth. And then I'm in this documentary, Orgasmic Birth, which kind of, have you seen it?
I have seen it. It's been a while.
Yeah, no, but it goes more in depth, not just about the safety, but that when women and partners and families are supported in this sort of home birth midwifery model of care, that not only is it safer, but women and their, you know, can have an ecstatic experience and can absolutely love their birth despite the, even if it, you know, how challenging it is. I mean, I've had people tell me they're in ecstasy with their pain. I've had people sing their babies out, dance their babies out, laugh their babies out, breathe, or sensually release their babies out. So, you know, it can be deeply meaningful for the entire, you know, family. And yes, orgasmic. That term can be used in many ways, not just sexual, but usually. And I give them a book or two. So that's the dad. That's the partner. I tell the family, especially the mom, this is just not a time to get in debates. I encourage them to have like this fortress of positivity around them, you know, and really watch inspiring positive birth stories. Fear is very contagious. Anxiety is very contagious. So when they start telling me they want their mom at the birth, or they want their mother-in-law or their sister, you know, I always, or, you know, their friends and their family, everyone's telling them, you know, how could you not be in the hospital? You know, so I really encourage them to set boundaries. You know, they can say, like, I am making this decision. I've put a lot of thought into it. And I really, you know, they can, in a very, you know, respectful way, kind of back out of conversations when someone else is very stressed out or anxious and questioning their decision, right? When someone is not pregnant, or not, you know, like we're having this conversation, or somebody like contacts me about, you know, they're really thinking about the safe, should they give birth in the hospital or the home, and questioning, you know, the safety of home birth, then we can have a respectful discussion, and we can talk about where they can find really good information that documents the safety of home birth, and that talks about the concerns that are in the hospital setting. There's no, you know, everyone that comes to my practice, I have a very big informed consent that they read and sign, because there's no, they need to take responsibility. I want them to have the power, them to take responsibility for their health, for their well-being, for their birth, take it back. It doesn't belong to me or any healthcare provider, any hospital setting. And so, yes, it's true. There are no guarantees in this field. So I'm going to do my best, and I trust the process, but I am there as a lifeguard, right? I am there as a lifeguard. I'm guarding, number one, the space, and making sure that there is no disturbance, and that the woman can feel safe, private, and undisturbed, and really tap into her inner knowing and her primal and her sensual. But that being said, I'm also watching, right? If there is an an issue that comes up, a lot of times, you know, let's prevent this from becoming a crisis. Sometimes it can just be something simple, making sure she's drinking, making sure she's moving around, that she's eating well, you know, and checking baby's heartbeat. And, you know, I am assessing and preventing problems. But if there is an emergency, that's why I'm here. You know, you're an apprentice. Have you taken Karen Strange, her NRP, neonatal resuscitation?
I have done neonatal resuscitation, but I haven't done Karen Strange's program.
Have you heard of her?
Amazing things about it.
She's amazing. Like, so she goes around the country, maybe even the world now, but she goes around the, I've been recertifying with her every 2 years, for years. It's NRP and neonatal resuscitation to out of hospital providers. You know, how do we use our skills and what we have in the home setting? Because we do, we bring the same equipment that any out of hospital birthing center would have, pretty much. Right. So, you know, how can we resuscitate a baby who needs to be resuscitated, but in the home setting or in the out of hospital setting, which totally, absolutely can be done. That's the most common emergency we would have with the baby. Most of the time we don't have it because we're not drugging mom. We're not putting mom, you know, mom, we've already screened through prenatal care. She's a low risk, healthy woman having a healthy pregnancy, healthy baby. But yeah, I mean, sometimes we have to do that. But you know, her whole thing is, look, the vast majority of times birth works. We wouldn't have been here. We wouldn't be here as human beings today. We're needed for those small percentage when it's not working, right?
Exactly.
That's really why we're there. Yeah, you know, I also feel like I'm there because there's so much fear today, and there's so much undoing of the kind of the damage that went on when hospital obstetrics kind of took over the healthy population in this country in the early mid 1900s. But, you know, because women aren't surrounded by birth like they were, and it's a foreign concept. It's taking place in an institution where people go to who are really sick, or you know. So people are hearing horror stories. They don't always hear great stories, or the media hype, right? There's just like so much fear and not confidence in the natural process. So part of what I have to do so much now is to help lessen the fear, help restore the confidence that a woman has in you know, and tap into her power. So that's huge. You know, that's a huge role I think midwives have to play today. But really, when we get down to it, the best intervention, you've heard Michel Odant, the obstetrician, the French obstetrician.
Yes.
Yeah, I love him. Yeah, he at a big midwifery conference, he asked, what's the best intervention that a midwife attendant or, you know, our obstetrician should do at a birth? And everyone was raising their hand, and pretty much his answer was to knit. I love it.
Oh, that's so perfect.
K-N-I-T. Yeah, to knit. And that's because, you know, what is knitting? Knitting is so beautiful, because knitting, like a provider, midwives, doctors, and also the family who's not familiar with natural birth, they feel like they have to be doing something. But there's nothing to do. There's nothing to fix. It's not broken. So give them the knitting needles and the hands will be busy, so they won't meddle in a process that's going well. Because, you know, the Hippocrates oath is first do no harm. All doctors have to take on a graduation of medical training. So intervention in a normal process of birth is harmful. You know, the risks outweigh the benefits. So but also knitting is beautiful because it's like midwives are with women. Or that whoever's knitting, even, you know, he kind of practices like a midwife. He does home birth in England. What is knitting? When you see when a woman is in labor and she sees her attendant who has, let's say, who's very seasoned and has been around 1,000 births and is so calm, they know everything's going well. They can sit and knit. Right.
Very comforting.
Yeah. that calm is contagious. It's like that woman, that will affect her labor, that will ease her labor, as opposed to a nervous attendant who's like, you know, the nervous energy in you know, anyone in the room, the mother, a sister, a family friend, you know, that can affect the mom just as well. But of course, you know, the midwife who's knitting, eyes are open, ears are open, mouth is open, can talk, can reassure the woman of her strength when she doubts it, and can certainly put the knitting down.
Sure.
If she needs to. But I just thought it was beautiful coming from an obstetrician, that really the best intervention is find something to do that your hands are busy.
And that
you can exude calm. Knit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, anyway, you know, I'm thinking as I hear you speak about the comfort that a midwife provides during a birthing time, and how that's so related to the midwifery model of care and the type of care that a midwife provides during the prenatal period. You know, you were speaking of a 2.5 hour initial consult and then an hour prenatal. And after that, you know, that allows so much time to build trust and to build relationship that you don't get with an OB.
Right. That's the relationship is huge, because, and it's an intimate one. I mean, I've been doing this now since 1997, my home birth practice. So like, you know, there's been families, I feel like I'm part of the family. I mean, the sister, the sister-in-law, the brother, all the, there's one family where I think I've caught 8 of this woman's grandchildren.
Oh.
And they all give birth in her house. She has 4 children and they've all given birth in her house. And then the friends, and you know, it just because it's you know, over many years, it becomes a very intimate experience. But you have to, that woman needs to be able to feel so safe and just trusting that she can be uninhibited. She can puke on me. She can poop on me. She can be naked. She can be intimate with her partner, and just feel so comfortable in her space and with her birth and with me, and that I need to be able to know her enough so that I can sense what she needs, what she doesn't need. And you know, everybody is so individual. And then sometimes, you know, obviously we get it wrong. You know, that's why I tell everyone, you know, let's write a birth plan preference, like of, you know, how do you envision your birth? What helps you? What doesn't? What you like? What you don't like? You know, I'll have a whole bunch of questions aside from, you know, all the 50 different decisions they have to make on all the different interventions that could possibly be done from, you know, the whole pregnancy to birth to postpartum journey, you know, especially in case if they need to be transferred. It's important for them to have their, you know, that part of the piece in writing, so that everybody, wherever they are, knows how they, you know, that the doula or the partner can advocate for her should we need to be in a different setting. But even so, like, I've had people on their birth plan, obviously they don't want an episiotomy and they don't want their water broke, you know, all that's obvious. I'm not doing right. They want to, but sometimes it's very individual. Like, they hate to be touched. So they want to be private, and I'm going to honor that. But then things change. They're in labor, right? And they mm-hmm. could be in hard labor. And, you know, like, I need, or, you know, somebody who wants to have more like a free birth with me in the background, and they want, dad wants to catch, and they only want me there just in case, you know, and sometimes they'll just change their mind. And, yep. you know, in the heat of things, they want me there.
Oh, birth does that to you.
Birth does that to you. Or, you know, someone that wants a water birth, but it's not working in the water when she's in the water for the pushing. And somehow it worked when she got out and was squatting by the, you know, with the rebozo on a door, you know, mm-hmm. yeah. whatever works at the time. But it's so good to get to know someone that well. And yeah, I mean, it's like, it's very late. Yes, I am assessing, of course, but a lot of it is, how are you doing? Conversation. How are you feeling? Helping them you know, navigate this journey, this peak life experience of bringing a baby into the world, becoming parents, you know, all the different decisions that they have to make, and how, you know, and really how can they support, you know, have better support in the pregnancy, bringing back the village for postpartum. You know, it there's so much that goes into it. Women are not just uteruses, right? They're human beings with lives and families, and holistic is, you know, just being, you know, knowing that a woman is a mind, body, heart, and soul, and with a family, that, and everybody else has the mind, body, heart, and soul, right?
Yes. So. And you touched on postpartum. I'd love to, before we wrap up, to hear a little bit about that. What do you recommend to mothers in the postpartum period? How should they transition, especially those moms who, you know, maybe this is a first time with a baby? What are your recommendations for that early phase, early period?
Huge. Well, okay. So I have a whole segment of my course, online course, that's devoted to that. And the way around the world and other cultures, especially indigenous ones, but still throughout history, women we lived in communities or tribes, right? And villages. When a woman has a baby, she's surrounded by a lot of the women in her family or community that make sure that she is resting and taken care of, so that she doesn't have to cook, clean, do errands or childcare or her other work. Like, that's being taken care of by everybody else in the community so that she can rest, recover, and get the breastfeeding going. So what happened that, like, in the last, you know, globalization of the, you know, the industrialization, you know, families, communities have been broken apart. People are moving all over the world. So I see a lot of people who are alone, you know, and it could either be maybe their family lives nearby, but everybody's working and they don't know other people having home births. And I certainly do. I know a lot of people having home births. But so how can we create a situation that you're not alone? How can we? So I take a calendar and I say, OK, you know, because everybody wants to. First we have to make sure we have help, for her during the labor. Right. Someone that can mother her during the labor, because a midwife is not a doula. Right. And the doula sort of fulfills that role of mothering the mother. Because we, you know, it used to be that the woman's mother was at the birth, or the mother-in-law, or the aunts, or this, all the wise elder women of the community who the woman was close with was mothering her during labor. So they're going to do that. They do that in postpartum, and they still do that around the world. But in our country, you know, in the hospital, we let them go at two days after a vaginal delivery, and, you know, 4 days after a cesarean birth. And they're left on their own. And then, you know, we have more postpartum illness, postpartum depression, that kind of stuff. So let's, in the pregnancy, I have them prepare. So how can we mobilize? You know, who are your people that could support you? You know, so some moms will say, oh, well, my mom's coming in, my husband can take off, or my partner can take off this amount of time, and he's good at cleaning and cooking, but he can't cook. I'm sorry. He's good at cleaning, but he can't cook, and he doesn't clean the way I do, you know? So,
of course.
Right. So, so I work with each woman, like, who is in your community? So maybe you have a church, you know, group that might, you know, cook for you for a week. But mother-in-law can come in for a week, and so can mother who lives across the country. Well, we don't want everyone coming at the same time. So like, rather than everyone visiting the mom, like, right after she had the baby, what we really need is to spread out the help so that that woman has it set up so that she has meals taken care of, childcare taken care of for the older children, you know, errands and cleaning. And some women might set, you know, for like 4 to 6 weeks at least. right? So some women might say to me, I don't really, I'm not close with my mother. She makes me stressed out. And my mother-in-law doesn't talk to my partner. You know, like, not everybody has a family, right? Or a friend. So then in the pregnancy, okay, well, we got to create a village here around you. So then I have a list of all these, all the moms in my practice who have agreed to be part of this list, who will support each other and other women having babies, right, in their neighborhood, right? So if a woman is in a certain county, I don't know where you live, but, you know, I cover an hour radius from my office. So I have a whole group of people in this county who's had babies, and they know just what it's like. So they're very happy to help here, right? Yes. So I will send an email out to them, you know, and I've had people, you know, become very close with that kind of group. Also, you know, there's baby wearing groups, La Leche League, prenatal yoga, childbirth classes. There's other ways to meet women, like-minded women in the pregnancy, so that you can create this village of people around you who are supportive of your choices.
That is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. And who know, you know, what it's like to be, you know, there's homeschooling mom groups, and, you know, that's basically what I do. And some people, you know, yeah, they'll hire a cleaning service. They might order takeout, or, you know, there's ways to put in the nursery. I'm sorry, the nursery, the registry, you know, if everyone wants to get gifts. So women, the baby does not need tons of teddy bears and newborn outfits that they're going to grow out of. Right. Mm-hmm. What they really need, if somebody wants to give them something, they can get a postpartum doula or, you know, pay for meals for that person for a week. Or I'm just making it up. There's so many, or cleaning service, or maybe an au pair or a mother's helper for the other kids.
Yes.
So we just try to mobilize all the resources that person has that she didn't even think about, you know, contacting this. Like I had a woman recently who gave birth, and her daughter was at a preschool, and she said, I don't really have a community. I don't have a church. She just didn't have a lot of her family lives all over the place. No one lived close by. And I said, I bet if you asked other mothers in the preschool, like, or if you have a friend, like, are you friendly with a mom in the preschool? She says, yes. I said, how about if you ask that woman if she can contact other mothers in the preschool and they can make a meal train for you? Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, this woman was sent meals for 3 weeks.
Oh.
Just from the preschool moms.
That's amazing. You know? Yep. And birth is something that certainly brings mothers together.
It's amazing. And you know, get off the phone, get off the Facebook, like, you know, but it's a great way to connect, of course, on Facebook and stuff like that. But I think that when women just have a baby and they're, you know, they're in that, it's such a special time. It's a vulnerable time. And it's a time where we need our community. We need to feel loved and taken care of and supported. I'm amazed how women just come together and help. Like, I'm just amazed. I mean, I had a woman in my practice who, I think it was like day 4 or 5 postpartum, she had appendicitis and she needed to have an appendectomy. She had to have her appendix taken out. And, oh my gosh, all I needed to do was send an email to all these moms in my mom group. And that woman had donor breast milk, mm-hmm. and like everybody, like she didn't even know the help that she was getting. We're giving, you know, meals and childcare for the other baby. And she had a toddler and the baby, because she wasn't allowed a nurse when she was in the hospital. So she had to pump and dump. It was just amazing that all these women from all over the place, you know, in my locality, all came together and helped this woman.
Well, and that's what I love about what you're doing, about, you know, the Home Sweet Home Birth that you have on Facebook, about even the Instagram account, just looking at at pictures of other mothers and other families, it really does bring a sense of community back. And I feel like that's so important.
Thank you. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do on the pages, you know, just this is a community here. You know, you can disagree. I don't care. Discussions, respect, keep them respectful and kind. But this is, I want, you know, as much as it is online, we can still have a sense of, you know, community.
Yes. Well, and on that note, Anne, and in closing, would you mind telling the listeners where they can find out more about you?
So my website is homesweethomebirth.com. And on Instagram, it's Home Sweet Home Birth, and Facebook, it's Home Sweet Home Birth. And the website, like, you know, it's just my work has been very local for so long, almost 23 years now, but it's gone really global. So the Home Sweet Home, a woman who needs to be in the hospital or wants to be in the hospital can still have that kind of care, kind of bring the home birth to the hospital. Mm. Absolutely. And if she needs to have a cesarean, look, my C-section rate's 5%, but those 5% are still human beings and they can still have a gentle cesarean. They can still have a family-centered cesarean. That's still a birth. And you know, we can as much as possible approximate the beauty and the humaneness and of it all in the operating room, you know. So it's not just for home birth families, although that's been my practice for 1997. We're almost in two.
Almost what year is it?
I started in 1997, so in November of 1997. So that's how long I've been doing. I've been attending home births, but I also, you know, it's sort of birthed, like I said, this online consulting. So people who want to have a home birth like experience in a hospital, if they need to be or want to be or can't, you know, don't have the option, the home birth option in their locality. But I really think this, you know, I have a different feeling about social media. I think, you know, we can use it to impact and affect huge positive change, you know, and I think the change comes from empowering the women and their families to speak up. You can't change hospitals and doctors and nurses, like, you know, but when you have a passionate, educated mom, she's gonna, you know. I'll end with, so this woman, this is an amazing story. I don't know if you saw it on my site, but there's a woman who took my online course. So I have, the online course was developed actually out of a podcast because this doula who was interviewing me out in San Francisco, she was like, do you have a course on how you bring women through your practice, you know? So no. And she says, well, I'd like to film you making that. Mm-hmm. And she's in film and marketing and her sister's in editing and we hit it off. And I actually literally took her up on it. I went out to San Francisco and really filmed how I, you know, it's more organized, but you know, how can the families have the most holistically healthy, beautiful journey from pregnancy through birth and postpartum and breastfeeding and baby care. And love the experience, even if it's, you know, of course, if it's challenging and a woman sent me an incredible testimonial. She was stationed in Central America, her husband was for work, and the only obstetrician, they lived in a very rural area, the only obstetrician that was available to her did cesareans. Like his cesarean rate was like 90 something percent. The ones that were born vaginally, like gave birth in the car on the way or something like that, you know, or by accident in the house. But basically he did not support vaginal birth, let alone natural birth. But she took my course and very respectfully, you know, said to him, you know, you know, she was empowered with knowledge and that she had a voice now, you know, and she spoke up and she said, this is, you're my obstetrician. I want to have a natural birth. And he first balked and said, no, but she says, you know, she presented him with good information and he agreed. And so just think, not only did she have a beautiful natural birth, she had a beautiful experience, but just think of the ripple effect of how that would affect that doctor with other women that he takes care of. Because he had really not, he says he's never seen a birth without any intervention. He didn't believe in it. But she taught him.
That's incredible.
That's an empowered, passionate woman who's pregnant, who wants to have an experience and had no other options.
Wow, that is so amazing. And I definitely will be looking into your childbirth program as I have my next. I would love to just experience, to go through what you teach.
Yeah, you know, and doulas and childbirth educators, like all sorts of birth professionals take it. They take it for their certification, but they also, a lot of professionals who serve pregnant women, whether it's an acupuncturist or a naturopath, you know, they take it to help them help women. It's sort of my, you know, sort of my, my approach that, it's holistic, but it's very, you know, it's very feminist. It's very, empowering. It's sensual. It's, you know, tapping into pleasure. It's just my yoga background. You know, it's a combination of all the different things that I guess all the different perspectives and, you know, the mind, body, heart, and soul. How can we really nurture all of them in this journey?
Oh, wow. Well, Anne, you are such a wealth of information. Yeah. I hope that you will be willing to come back on and talk more about, you know, you mentioned birth trauma and your postpartum work. I just would love to hear from you again. And I'm so grateful that you were able to come on today. And I know that the listeners are just going to love this. So thank you so much.
A pleasure.
Oh, all righty. Well, thanks, Anne.
All right.